Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTH.
Welcome to Truth Wanted, the weekly live call-in show where we talk to you about the truth and how to find it. I'm your host, MD Aware, and joining me this week is Adam El Masri. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you, MD. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, our pleasure. We're going to talk to Adam a whole bunch about what he does and what his social media presence and his YouTube channel is all about. But before that, if you want to talk to us live on air about what you believe and why, give us a call at 1-512-991-9242 or through your computer at tiny.cc/callTW. Call now to make sure that you get on the air. For anyone listening or watching in the future, you can catch Truth Wanted live on YouTube every Friday, 7 Central. Hope to see you there next week. Truth Wanted is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of religion and government. And with all that stuff out of the way, Adam, once again, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. Why don't you introduce yourself to the Truth Wanted community? Tell us what your channel is all about and what you're all about.
Well, thanks again for having me. My name is Adam El Masri. I'm originally from Egypt. And surprise, surprise, I was heavily religious myself for most of my life. I was born and raised as a Coptic Christian, Orthodox Christian. Mm. And that's until like 7-8 years ago. And then I had my own truth-seeking journey. I started having doubts and reading a lot. And eventually I joined one of the greatest universities in Australia. I did a degree in biblical studies and textual criticism. By the end of that degree, I came to denounce my faith and no longer believe in what I believed in for the majority of my life.
Wow.
But because of the nature of my journey, it was coming from a very heavily religious background. My entire social circle was based in the church. You can imagine how traumatizing. I also lost a long-term relationship in the process. And yeah, lots of things happened. So that was the seed for me to start a YouTube channel, one, to help people who are truth seekers themselves and help people with critical thinking and other issues that I went through, but also to create a support community for the people who don't know how to go through the experience that I went through, in a nutshell. So I started my YouTube channel in Arabic about 5 years ago. As of yesterday, it reached 100,000 subscribers and over 12 million views. Thank you so much. And I also started an English YouTube channel, Adam El Masri English channel. Started that about 6 months ago, and it's picking up really well because I found that there is a little bit of lack when it comes to English material, specifically speaking about the Quran or about Islam. There is a lot talking about Christianity and Judaism, but not much about Islam, especially from an Arabic speaker who can speak English. So that was the reason behind the English channel. Well, to be honest, there is not major differences when it comes to Orthodox, Catholic, and Protestant. I guess in the US, Catholic and Protestant would be the two big denominations. On the surface level, there isn't much difference. The difference is really in the deep detail theologically. Was the Father and the Son equal? Was the Father and the Son, as in Jesus and Jehovah, did they start at the same point in time, or were they both eternal? All these sorts of tiny theological differences. But they all agree on the major things. Yeah, Jesus died for our sins, blah, blah, blah. The whole dogma is the same. Absolutely. So it's a funny thing. Even though I was born and raised Christian, you are forced to study the Quran from a very young age because this is how you study Arabic as a subject in school. So in order to pass your exams, you have to study Quran anyway and memorize parts of it, regardless of your own personal faith. Let me tell you this, the second clause in the constitution, it's actually in the constitution of Egypt. It says Islam and the Quran is the source of legislation. It's the complete opposite of separation. In a way, yes. However, in the 40 years that I lived so far, there have been some good acknowledgement of Coptic Christians in Egypt. Yet still among the public, there are acts of discrimination and certain random things, but not much at a government level.
Okay.
Well, that's not good to say that at government level there is no discrimination. There is, so right, no one right. takes me wrong.
But it's gotten better, it's not, I guess. As
obvious, a little bit, yeah.
Right. Okay. And I guess going back to your YouTube channel, who is it targeted at? Like, which of our viewers would be the types who might be interested in your content?
So it depends if you're talking about the Arabic YouTube channel or the English YouTube channel, because obviously they have different audience.
Yes.
So in the Arabic world, my work is mostly about getting people to think.
Hmm.
So it's targeting mostly believers. I try to use, there's no hate language whatsoever. I try to use as much as I can respectful language and really walking on eggshells sometimes. Because I want people to listen. The point is I'm not trying to intimidate or upset people.
Right.
I'm basically laying down reasons why I don't believe. And I had great success stories. Every day I get messages from people saying, I left religion thanks to you. I am a deist because of you. And again, so many good things.
Mm-hmm.
In the English world, it's a different story. I am targeting mainly the Muslim world. I don't focus much on Christianity in the English channel, mm-hmm. as I said, because there is already a lot of material in Christianity around Christianity and Judaism.
Right.
So my audience on the English channel is mostly Muslims, specifically from the UK, Indonesia, mm-hmm. Areas that need someone who can speak English fluently, but also can access the Quran in Arabic and access its meanings and Islamic traditions and stuff like that.
Interesting. Now, before the show started, you were talking about some human rights issues that the impression I got is that you were trying to address them with some of your content. Can you expand upon that?
Absolutely. So two major issues. Obviously, there are a lot of human rights breaches, especially in the Middle East. But the two main striking ones are women rights and gay rights. So, for instance, women are not, like I can mention many things. So women in Saudi Arabia until very recently, they weren't allowed to drive, if you know that.
Right.
In most Islamic countries, women are not equal by law. So basically for every male witness in a court system, if you have a case in the court, every male witness has to have two female witnesses to counter the witness. So even their word is not, as a witness, is not equal under the law. They're discriminated in inheritance. Again, in most cases, a male would get double the inheritance of a female when the father is passed away. Lots of women rights breaches in the Middle East, and it is all coming from the Quran, basically, because if Islam is the source of legislation and if this is how Islam presents the ultimate law, then this is how it is applied. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so I think there's a lot of people in predominantly Christian countries who say that they're doing things that are, you know, endorsed by the Bible, for instance, endorsed by Christianity, but others would say that they aren't. Does that controversy exist in Islam as well? Like, are some of these legislation items ostensibly based on something in the Quran, but not truly? Or what are your thoughts on that sort of thing?
No, it is plain and very clearly stated in the Quran. Yes, you will get some individuals saying that we're not going to apply it to our family. I know that my sister is struggling. So when our father passed away, we divided the inheritance equally. But these are kind of personal choices. This is not the law. The law allows you, or if the law enforcement comes into play, then it is 2-for-1. I wouldn't say that it applies to, it applies to everyone, but not everyone chooses to apply it.
I see.
So that's one thing. On the other hand, homosexuality or gay, being gay in an Arab country is illegal. Criminalized. Yeah. And depends on which country we're talking about. It varies from very heavy fines to imprisonment to death sentence sometimes. But the bigger issue is not the legislation, it's more what the public do. So I think it was about 2 years ago, they found someone in Egypt who was openly gay. They simply, the public took him on the roof of a six-story building and they threw him off the building. So people take law enforcement in their own hands, and their justification is that, well, God said. So I don't even need to take a person to through the legal system. Well, God already sentenced that person to death or sentenced. So, yeah.
What happens to those people who do that in Egypt? Like, what do the police or government or whoever do when that sort of thing happens?
Usually it is they get arrested. There is a massive investigation that leads into nothing at the end. They basically walk away with a slap on the wrist because at the end of the day, they didn't do anything wrong. You know,
right.
Like, they're acting in accordance to God's
constitution, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is where I found the deep need for my work on YouTube, because it wasn't about changing the legislation. It's about raising public awareness and getting people to think this is not the ultimate law. These things did not come from God, if God exists, but these things are not heavenly. So, yeah.
And
challenging thoughts.
Yeah. Do you think you're changing hearts and minds, sort of thing? Like, you mentioned that there are some people who've reached out and said, you know, that they're deconverting or they've changed some things. Have you had any movement on the human rights front?
I had great stories, but mostly individual stories. I wouldn't say movements. There are certain movements growing in the Middle East now. People are trying to have higher voices, and that it's a little complicated to explain, but I will tell you one specific story that I encountered about 3-4 months ago. I got a beautiful, beautiful message from an Iraqi judge. Now, Iraq also implements an Islamic law system. So, for instance, if you are caught during the month of Ramadan not fasting, you're brought to court, and it's either a heavy fine or usually a 30 days imprisonment.
Wow.
So this judge, being Muslim herself, she used to sentence people when they bring them in during Ramadan not fasting, and she wouldn't even blink about it. She's doing the right thing. Now, about a year and a half ago, she found my channel and she started following me, and she goes, well, you're one of the very few people who convinced me that this religion is man-made. And after listening to you for a year and a half, now I'm struggling to perform my job, so to speak. I don't know, when they bring someone to the court now, I have massive guilt. I cannot send them to imprisonment, but at the same time, I cannot set them free. So what do you advise me? So she started asking me to provide her with actually academic material on, if she sets someone free, how can she argue with her peers that she still implemented an Islamic mercy law, kind of.
Interesting.
So she would at least back herself up for sending these people free. So a bit by bit, very slowly, I can see that there are changes happening even in the legal system, even in the high up. I don't know. I know it's an individual thing. I'm not changing the legislation, but that's how it all starts, you know, raising awareness. And a bit by bit, maybe through 2-3 generations, things will change slowly.
Yeah, it's a cultural shift. It must be difficult. Well, that's very interesting. And I know, like, I'm definitely going to be checking out your English channel. I found you on YouTube, but all I found off the top was the Arabic channel, and I could not figure out what was going on. I was very confused. I was like, is this the right guy? So anyway,
if you type, so I'm going to be checking out the English channel.
Okay, perfect.
If you type it all as one search, it will come up the first thing.
Fantastic. So I'm going to be checking that out, and I encourage all of our Truth Wanted viewers out there to check it out as well. We'll be getting to our live calls shortly, but before we do, we need to show some appreciation to our patrons. And so we'll shout out our patron of the week, someone who donates to Truth Wanted through our Patreon at tiny.cc/patreontw. As a special bonus, when I'm hosting, I will bestow an exclusive custom patron sainthood to our patron of the week. And the patron saint this week is Linda Sherwood. Congratulations, Linda. I hereby bestow upon you the title patron saint of pastels. You may introduce yourself using this title henceforth. Big thanks again to you, Linda, and to all of our patrons from all of us here at Truth Wanted and the ACA. Okay, Adam, are you ready to get into some calls?
Absolutely.
All right. Why don't we start talking to Red? Red is calling in from Ohio. And Red wants to talk about a conspiracy about how the government has a cure for cancer, but they won't release it since they make money off it. Red, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, nice to talk to both of you tonight. I hope you both are doing well.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
The start of this is, I heard this from my coworkers mostly. I, of course, am skeptical of this conspiracy theory, but I wanted to call in when you were on and get your thoughts on it. Usually this coworker isn't really a conspiracy theorist person, from what I can tell. But I do know that she unfortunately had someone close to her that died of cancer. And we were talking about cancer one day at work, and that's when they started saying, I believe that the government has a cure for the cancer, but they won't release it because they make money off of it. And I told them that what doesn't make sense, because I don't think that all of those people in there would just be silent about something as big as that. That's a pretty big secret to keep. And she responded, well, she says it's not per se the doctor's fault. They're not in on it. I guess presumably the government. She didn't really specify who was keeping this secret. And she says you don't really understand unless you have somebody close to you who's had cancer. So I kind of just dropped the conversation at that. It probably wouldn't have went well if I kept pushing it, but I just wanted to call in and ask you, how do I refute this? Because I don't know any other talking points really.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had a really good first question. There's like a million ways to go with that subject, right? But you had a very good first question, which was like, how do they keep that sort of secret? Because, and you asked, okay, well, who in the government is keeping this secret, right? It's like, that's another great question. One person can keep a secret. Apart from that, I don't know. These sort of things get out. Like, just take a look at what's happening in the US right now with all of this, stuff around Trump's indictment and things like this. Like, can you imagine if this was like attempting to be kept secret? It would have been impossible. And the number of people who would be involved in a potential like discovering a cure for cancer, for the government to have it and then having to be silent about it. Like that's a really good point that I think you made first off. Second thing is like from a medical perspective, I immediately have thoughts about even the topic because a cure for cancer to me doesn't make any sense because cancer is sort of a category of disease. It's not one specific disease, right? So it's like saying I have a cure for infection. And you say, you know, on the surface, you're like, okay, a cure for infection, sure. But then you're like, well, wait, what kind of infection? Like bacteria, a specific bacteria? We know that there's certain antibiotic resistance that exists, right? So does it cure all bacterial infections? What about like fungal infections? And what about viruses? Like, is it the same cure that works on all of these different things? And so treating cancer as like one disease, I think shows a real lack of understanding of what exactly cancer is. And then, I mean, there's this whole idea of like, oh, the government has this, but they don't want to release it because they make money off of cancer. And I would argue that that's probably not true, right? Because generally people with cancer die of cancer in a relatively short window, which is unfortunate, obviously. And apart from some particular very well-treated cancers, it's a, you know, generally a terminal thing unless it's completely cured. So you can cure certain cancers with like surgery. You can cure certain cancers with combinations of surgery and chemo and radiation. Cures for particular cancers exist right now, but a catch-all cure for cancer obviously doesn't exist. And there's variation within cancers. The more interesting question, I think if you look at where a lot of money is made right now, it's not in cancer drugs. It's in things like blood pressure drugs and cholesterol drugs and lifestyle drugs like Viagra, right? Like those are multi-billion dollar drugs because they're treating something that is not going to necessarily kill the person. It's something that the person needs to take every day to sort of extend their life or improve their quality of life, this sort of thing, right? So cancer is not a good, to me, candidate for a like conspiracy-based healthcare situation where they're withholding some treatment because they're already making too much money off of it. I think that's a very, I think that's not well thought through. But what do you think, Adam? You have any thoughts on this particular conspiracy?
Well, I'm not sure about the US. I live in Australia myself, and I would find it very, very hard, especially that in Australia, we do. So all cancer patients, they go to hospitals and get treatments under the Medicare system. So if anything, I would say that cancer is a massive cost on the government, not that they make money out of you. That's actually quite the opposite. So if there is any potential for a cure, I would find the government really putting all their heart in to get that. And also that there has been, I read recently that there is backing you up on cancer is a category like infection. There is a medicine that was announced lately, specifically targeting bowel cancer. And they said that it's a breakthrough in medicine because this particular medication has so far 100% success. They are going through the placebo testing at the moment to see if this percentage really adds up and it's true. But as I said, yes, it's targeting bowel cancer specifically. So the question should be raised what type of cancer they found cure for. And also in the light that, assuming that this story is true, here we can see that there are some announcements when potential medication or cure has been found for bowel cancer, it is being announced. So why do we assume that other cancer medication is hidden or they're conspiring to hide another cure? So that would mm-hmm. be my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, and I think I know the paper you're talking about and the drug you're talking about. So this was like a paper that I think was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is like the biggest medical journal in the world. And if I'm thinking of the right thing, even that cure that they found is only for a very specific subtype of rectal cancer, I think, or colorectal cancer mm-hmm. or something like that. It's not like a silver bullet miracle shot, you know? And I think that, frankly, those sorts of cures just don't exist, right? Like, real life is just more complicated. And it would be great if we could figure out one easy way to cure cancer. But like, I don't know if you know Adam or if you know Red, but I recently did my PhD in biomedical engineering on treatments for colorectal cancer. And so I even came into my PhD thinking that, oh, the thing I was working on, it's so promising. It's going to be like a miracle drug. It's going to kill all the cancer. And like, it's just not that easy. It's more complicated. So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton of ways you could go with this conversation, Red. What do you think about what we've said so far? Anything useful?
I just think about the different types of cancer before as a talking point. I just kind of, I guess, to do what other people do is kind of clump all cancers all together. But in hindsight, I guess that's not really fair to do when there's such variety in each of them. There was another talking point that the coworker did say to me, and she told me that if they could make a vaccine so quickly for COVID, but they can't find a cure for cancer in all these years that we've been researching, that was another reason why she believed that the cure for cancer was being hidden, which I also, it doesn't sound like a strong talking point, but again, I know that talking about cancer was something emotional for her, so I didn't want to press her on the matter.
Well, what do you think about that, Red? What would you have said to her if she wasn't, if you weren't worried about hurting her feelings?
Not sure, honestly. This isn't the first time I've heard somebody say that. Actually, it was in the opposite. If they can't find a cure for cancer, why can't we expect them to make a vaccine so quickly? That's the other way I've heard it. But I guess it's kind of two sides of the same coin. One's more complex than the other. I mean,
one is more specific than the other, right? Like, On the one hand, you're saying, well, we figured out a vaccine, which is not a cure, right? It's a preventive and morbidity, severity reducing medication for one specific type of infection, which we now know has variable effectiveness across different strains of the same infectious agent, right? Like your Delta vaccine is different from your Omicron vaccine and all this sort of thing. So they're saying that we're able to treat one, but we're not able to cure an entire family of cancers. Like, I think it's almost the same fallacy that's going on where it just sort of, to me, betrays a lack of understanding of what's going on and what cancer really is, right? And it's, again, it's not an easy thing. And I only know this because I have, like, you know, extensive training in this. But yeah, cancer is a complex disease. And, you know, even two colon cancers, like a colon cancer from the right side of the colon versus a cancer from the left side of the colon, both act differently. And even within a single tumor, there could be lots of different genetic variations and things like that. And it just makes it a very complex disease to treat. But I think you have, I mean, obviously, I think you have the right instincts, Red, on this. And I think you're approaching it in a good way. And I'm also glad to hear that you are being considerate of your coworkers' feelings when you're addressing it. It's always good to make sure you don't come off as an asshole, right?
Yeah. Anything
else you wanted to add, Adam?
Not really, no. I agree with the last thing you said. And I was thinking, well, obviously, you're the PhD on medical science here, but the first thing I had in mind is, like, we cannot compare a virus that we can create a vaccine for with a disease that is not triggered by external factors. It's actually the body attacking itself in a way, or the cells behave in a different way. So it's not a virus that we can go and create a cure for. Thus, it's a much more complicated issue. So yeah, I agree with.
Yeah, it's true.
I cannot articulate it as you put it.
Yeah, it's true. What do you think, Red?
I think I have a lot of research to do on these points you've been talking about, because I do find this all very interesting, and I want to be able to form my talking points a lot better. So I thank you very much for helping me find some more points to look into and possibly refuting this. I probably won't refute it with this person, because I feel like they're still pretty emotional about what happened to their close relatives with cancer, but maybe somebody else along the line I could probably help convince or help see and be into have a skeptical mind in it.
Yeah, probably still a bit raw, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call. For anyone who's interested, Red, you included, there's a great book called The Emperor of All Maladies, I think, which is all about cancer. And I think it would give you a good understanding of sort of what cancer is and what people have been doing, what scientists and doctors have been doing over sort of the course of history to treat it. But again, thanks very much for your call, Red. That's a very interesting thing. And I'm always happy to nerd out a little bit about medicine and cancer when I get the excuse to do it. How you feeling, Adam?
Feeling great.
Good. You want to keep going? We've got one that's a little more on point for both of us, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoot.
All right. So next, let's talk to Jasmine. Jasmine is calling to talk about religion and medicine, I think, or faith healing, or religion and COVID vaccine. We've got quite a range there, Jasmine. What do you feel like talking about today?
Well, I was going to leave it up to the host what interests you of those three. I'm willing to speak about all three.
Sure. I guess why don't we start with the first thing? What are you thinking about with respect to religion and medicine?
Well, I find just religion and medicine very, very tangled. I mean, you're a doctor, you would know. And all the doctors I've worked for have been generally very religious. I mean, there are exceptions, of course, but I don't know. I find it something that's very difficult to navigate, and I get a lot of different opinions from a lot of different people. And even the studies are, there's some that are pro, there are some that are inconclusive, and there's some that are negative with regards to things like religion and religious-based treatments. So I find it so very tangled. I'm not sure how to navigate.
What sort of religious-based treatments are you thinking about?
Well, prayer, faith healings, that kind of thing, reciting passages from various holy books.
And you're saying that you've had doctors, I see you're in Canada, which is also where I am. Have you had doctors doing prayer as a method of treatment in Canada, in a hospital?
No, not specifically. Though I do know of, like, I came across a study approximately 40%-ish.
Jasmine, still there? We may have lost Jasmine. She sort of just cut out there. I'm going to put her back in the queue, and maybe our friends behind the scenes can see if she can reconnect, but we'll see. Anyways, for anyone out there watching, if you want to step in on this conversation, you can call us at 512-991-9242. Call now. We have some open lines. But Adam, what do you think about what Jasmine was saying about this confluence between religion and medicine? Do you see that?
I do. I didn't expect it to be apparent in countries like Canada, US, Australia, but I certainly have seen lots of examples of these. In fact, being a Coptic Orthodox myself, until very recently, maybe about 20 years ago, there was a specific prayer in the Coptic Orthodox Church called Abuturbo prayer, which is for the healing of a dog bite. So if a person
That's very specific.
Yeah. if a person is being bitten by a dog or bitten by a dog bite usually is infectious and you're supposed to go and get some injections, but people would take their kid or even adults, go to the church, and they have this very paganistic ritual where they get seven little kids below 7 years old holding candles and going in circles around you. It's kind of like witchcraft sort of thing. And that is supposed to heal you from the dog bite.
Wow.
But I think in the last 20 years, the church has banned this prayer, and they say it is so unorthodox. Don't know how it leaked into our church, but if you got bitten by a dog, please go and take the injection shot. So I'm glad they came to that point after all.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm very curious to see, if Jasmine called back in, because, I live and work in Canada, and I have never seen any type of sort of faith healing or religious-based medicine, I would say, practiced in reality. Now, with that said, there are some issues, at least where I work, with Roman Catholic-based hospitals, and they are sort of like run by nuns and other like Catholic higher power people, I guess. I don't know. And higher ups. And it mostly doesn't affect day-to-day practice. It's a little bit weird to be working, in a place where you have to walk by like a statue of the Virgin Mary every day sort of thing. In the halls, or like where there's crosses above every doorway. But the biggest area where I think this comes into conflict that I've observed is some of these hospitals don't offer certain types of care that would be against like Catholic teaching. And the biggest one is like abortion. So a lot of these hospitals won't provide abortion services and potentially even certain birth control services. And instead they will like find a way around it by, referring the patient to some other institution, which I obviously have problems with as a, atheist physician working in these hospitals. But like I said, I've never really seen people doing prayer circles or anything like that as a means of trying to cure a disease in a person,
I have a question for you. Let me play the devil's advocate here for a second. Because you said you may have some issue around having a statue of Virgin Mary or crosses everywhere in the hospital. But isn't it scientifically proven, and take what I say with a grain of salt, that positive psychology and positive feelings is very important for your healing process? As an atheist, you might think that it's your internal body healing itself. There is no external force or external power. But for believers in this hospital, if someone is choosing to go to a Roman Catholic hospital, assuming that they are Roman Catholic themselves or at least Christians, don't you think that these things actually help them maintain a positive state, which is also essential for their healing process? Thus, it's a positive thing, not a negative thing.
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think that essential, no. Helpful, potentially. But I also think that the problem is that, as I'm sure you know, with Coptic Christianity, I think they are similarly strict to Roman Catholic. I was raised Roman Catholic for like 18 years or so. They're very, very strict and specific, and there's a lot of guilt involved. And so I think maybe a certain subset of Christians will identify with the Roman Catholic iconography and values and all this thing, and it will come across as a positive situation. But like, I also live in one of the most multicultural cities in the world, and there's a lot of non-Roman Catholics who come to the hospital, right? The majority of people who come to the hospital are not Roman Catholic. And I think it's, you know, it's just not very nice to cater to such a narrow audience. So that's what I would say. But I totally agree with you that I think that, you know, making a healing environment, a positive psychology for these patients is very important. And I just think that we need to tailor it a little bit more. And I think that it's a lot easier to do that in a more secular space, where it's not literally built into the, you know, pillars holding up the building sort of thing. If you want a cross in your room, then sure, we'll bring you a cross and we'll take it out when you get discharged sort of thing. And the next guy can get whatever other religious iconography he wants. All right. It looks like Jasmine has called back. So let's take Jasmine. Jasmine, are you back?
Yes. Great. Yes. Sorry about that.
No problem. So I think you were telling us about your experiences with sort of faith healing in Canada, in some of these hospitals. Can you tell us what you've experienced?
Well, my specific experiences?
Or what you've heard or whatever.
Not doctors. It's more, well, with regards to specifically religious practices, mostly with the native, you know, like smudging and that kind of thing, and singing and drumming, as well as, again, Christian. I haven't seen specifically MDs praying, but I've seen sometimes the support workers will do that. I've seen that's specifically what I've seen. And again, the doctors I've worked for have tended to be quite religious. I've had a lot of doctors from a lot of Muslim countries come, and so they tend to be religious too.
Sure. Do you think that, what do you think that the religiosity of the physicians does to their practice, the way they practice medicine?
I wouldn't say it's independent, but I think if you have two people aligned with the same kind of belief system, perhaps it maybe enhances a little. I'm not entirely sure, but that's my thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm sort of getting from what you're telling me is that there's a lot of different types of people, and some of those people become doctors. And so there's a lot of different types of doctors. One of my teachers in medical school once said that saying you're a doctor is like saying you own a car. It doesn't actually tell you anything at all about the person, because, you know, there's people who drive pickup trucks, and there's people who drive, you know, Toyota Priuses, and there's people who drive transport trucks. And, you know, these are all very different people. It doesn't really tell you anything. And I think the same thing goes for MDs. You know, there's Christian MDs, and there's atheist MDs, and there's Muslim MDs, and there's Sikh MDs, and Hindu, and I'm speaking about, not in abstract, about physicians that I know. I know a Coptic Christian MD, I know Muslim MDs, I know like all of these people. And the thing that I think is most important, at least in my experience, is that they don't try to treat the patient or cure disease using their religion, right? They sort of separate them in their mind. You know, when someone comes in with an infection, they don't pray, they reach for the antibiotics, right?
Yeah, I would hope.
Right. So what's your concern about about like medicine and religion being tangled up, you said?
Well, again, I'm questioning my own beliefs, and I used to be very religious. We're talking Christianity previously, and we're talking like least an hour before I go to work and at least an hour or two after. And I always sort of tangled religion and healing and, you know, the whole group together. And I'm just trying to work through these things in my mind, basically. And like I said, I've gotten so many different opinions. I talked to one of your other hosts, Erin, and she was extremely vehement against faith healing, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess that's what I'm asking, but nothing that you have mentioned to me so far today, to me, reads as faith healing, right? To me, faith healing is when, you know, someone has a problem, a health problem, and instead of going to a doctor or a nurse or, you know, a hospital, they instead go to see their priest or their rabbi or whatever, and then the priest or rabbi does something to them. Is that the faith healing that you're talking about, Jasmine?
In part, I mean, I actually am in training for, I don't want to say specifically, but an alternative health field. And so that's why the faith healing, the placebo effect is something of interest, especially since it's an alternative health field.
So do you think that...
I don't want to go too much into what it is.
That's okay. Do you think that faith healing only works using the placebo effect?
Well, right now, yes. I'd say yes. Previously, probably not. I would have thought maybe prayer would somehow amplify things, but I think it's mostly placebo, if not totally.
Oh, so what do you think that means? What does that mean about prayer as like an intervention?
Well, to me, if you're trying to promote placebo effect, you've got to try to be as sincere as possible. So again, if your beliefs align with your client or your patient, whatever, all the better. If they, if they don't, they don't. But again, especially rural areas, I find are very, very religious, and it's so hard to escape.
Who's religious?
The rural areas. I work in a lot of. I worked in a lot of the rural areas, and you just kind of escape, especially Christianity in the rural areas. Oh,
okay. Rural areas. I see. That's fair. What do you think, Adam? What's going on in your head right now?
I'm not sure. I would think yes. I was reading faith healing the same. Someone goes to a priest or a rabbi. I haven't seen much of being religious yourself, religious doctor, kind of both on the same. But at the same time, it doesn't interfere with actual prescriptions. And there is no problem being the patient or the doctor to be just and speak religious language in the examination.
Sure.
That's not what is prescribed. But it might be an issue. Personally, when I left and if I go to doctor problems, well, you just need to pray a little bit more and, you know, just ask God. But at the end of the day, you give me a prescription that I can take to the pharmacy XYZ. And okay, I would take it with a grain of salt, but as I got a proper medical scientific prescription
treatment.
After all, if that makes any treatment.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jasmine, that you say that you think that faith healing is a purely placebo effect, because, you know, usually when we're doing like a scientific study to see if a treatment is effective, we use placebo as the sort of like negative control group, right? We say, well, we basically the definition of the placebo effect is that it doesn't actually have any healing properties of its own. It could be anything that just makes the person feel like they're being healed. And so for that reason, I think a lot of, you know, I think I was certainly surprised when you said you think that faith healing is a purely placebo effect. And but you still think that it's like, it sounds like you think that it's like a thing that should be done. I think that if you are someone who is selling a placebo and you know it's a placebo, that means that you're selling something, you're taking someone's money when you know that the thing that you're selling them doesn't actually do anything. You're basically just tricking them into thinking that it's going to help when it doesn't actually help. What do you think of that, Jasmine?
Well, couldn't you say a bit that even about religion, technically? I mean, placebo effects... mine does have some ability to heal the body, but the alternative medicine is very different from traditional Western and what you're trying to do for people. I don't think it's simply taking people's money. I think it's a different way of addressing the problem, maybe.
Interesting. I think this is a big discussion we can have on just like the philosophy of alternative medicines here. So like, what do you think that we need to get from alternative medicine that we don't get from Western medicine?
Well, in Western medicine, I find it's very, and it should be, you know, it's very scientific based. You need all the, all the lab tests, all the diagnostics, all the pharmacology, all that. But from what I hear from people sort of generally is that, that more personal effect from alternative medicine as opposed to the more, I hate to hesitate to use this word, but the more sort of factory, less personal touch maybe that Western medicine can afford.
Yeah, I get you. Do you think that that has something to do with the actual thing that Western medicine is doing or that alternative medicine is doing? Or do you think it's more the way that we're doing it? Like, do you think, I guess if I were to put it another way, do you think if we could have five times as many doctors as we do now so that the doctors could have, instead of 5 to 10 minutes to see you in the clinic, they could have half an hour to 45 minutes to talk to you in the clinic. Do you think that would achieve the same goal?
I would say, getting that amount of professionals would be difficult in any system.
I agree. But I'm just saying, like, to me, these alternative medicines, including faith healing, are, you know, they're not actually adding anything real. They're just adding basically someone to talk to a little bit more. And I totally agree that, like, sometimes that's what people need, right? Sometimes you just need someone to talk to you about your problems, and the act of talking about it makes you feel better. But I think that it's a mistake to conclude from that there's something that these alternative medical practitioners and these faith healers are doing that's actually helping the patient in a way that is genuine, as opposed to something that's sort of just a social benefit. I don't know. What do you think, Adam? What do you think about alternative medicines, I guess?
I always struggled with this, to be honest. From a philosophical perspective, I always struggled with the idea of placebo, because if you come in pain and if I give you a sugar tablet that doesn't have any active ingredients in it, but at the end of the day, it kills your pain, isn't that a painkiller? Yeah, maybe you and I, we know that there is no ingredient in it, but as far as I'm concerned, if it did kill the pain of the patient, that was in a way the purpose after all. And from that point, because I struggled with that concept a bit, when I also looked at alternative medicine, that maybe it's not backed up by research or results that you can replicate every time, but if people are benefiting from it, even if we're talking about certain individuals, I don't know how to categorize them. But yeah, I myself struggled with that concept of alternative medicine and placebo.
Very interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point, right? Because placebos are helpful, right? That's like part of their definition, is that they do potentially make someone feel better, even though there is no active ingredient. And I think that the key is that you're right. If we compare it to no, like getting nothing at all, versus getting a sugar pill, does the sugar pill make them feel better? If yes, then hey, then you're getting some treatment, right? And you could say, well, that's a painkiller. So yeah. I mean, it's a very interesting topic. I think that this would be a great thing to dive into in more detail. But Jasmine, I think we need to let you go. But thank you very much for calling in.
Okay.
Very interesting discussion. And feel free to call again in the future, and we can chat about some more of this sort of thing.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks, Jasmine. Thanks for the call. It's been great so far. If you're enjoying Truth Wanted, you might be interested to hear that there are a bunch of other shows that are produced by the ACA that you can check out, including The Nonprofits, Secular Sexuality, Talk Heathen, and of course, The Atheist Experience. If you missed them, here's a sneak peek of what happened on the ACA last week.
Especially if we're white women, I think it's easy for us to continue perpetuating patriarchy because
we're number two.
Exactly. Now we're starting to realize, as we're losing rights that other women have never had, we're finally like, the patriarchy, when we should have been like that all along.
My brother had seen this ball of light fly over his head. And then a couple days later, I saw the same thing. Years later, after I left the faith, I Googled what that could have been. Carbon monoxide poisoning is the answer.
Garvin Monocchi.
The longest running show and one of the biggest Broadway hits of all time. And the first thing that the Doors Church decided to do was say, let's take Hamilton, make it Jesus-y and f*** it up.
Why didn't he say, hey, you shouldn't actually own another person?
He didn't have the right to say these things in that era. But he did.
He didn't have the right?
He didn't have the right?
He didn't have the right.
He was God in flesh. Bro, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Eve was made out of a rib in the Bible. That's what it says. Adam was made out of mud. If we're going to say one of them is clearly connected to reality and therefore it can't be a coincidence, why can't we say, ah, yes, here's the mud people that came up out of mud, and that collects with the Bible too.
Whether you believe or not believe, if you are an essential worker, we of course want to thank you as well. And if you don't believe, this is your community. And if you do believe, we don't hate you.
We just think you're wrong.
Hey, we're back. Before we jump into some more calls, Adam, I'm just going to take 2 seconds to plug some of our other stuff that we have going on. If you like having these discussions and you want to have more of these, you can check out our fan-run Facebook group at tiny.cc/FBTWG for more discussions and news about the show, and for an opportunity to try out some of these arguments and discuss, you know, debrief after the shows and things like that. And if you prefer to engage with ACA shows asynchronously, you can find audio only episodes at tiny.cc/AENpodcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I get them off of Apple Podcasts, and that's where I listen to them usually when I'm commuting or when I'm on call and I'm trying to get some stuff done. Put them on background. It's great. What do you think, Adam? Are you ready for some more calls?
Yes.
All right. Your enthusiasm is overwhelming. Okay, let's talk to Frank in Illinois. He's got some questions about our previous religious history, I think. I'll just let Frank elaborate. Frank, what do you want to talk to us about today?
Hello. I was just, I'm an atheist, and I was raised Roman Catholic, and I know you said you were too. And the other host said that he was raised Christian, but knows quite a bit about Muslim religion. I was kind of wanting to the history on, let's just say, Muslim and Christian is pretty much the same from what I understand. They both worship the same ultimate God. Isn't that true?
Adam, go ahead. I've been talking too much this episode.
They both claim that they worship the same God, yes.
Yeah, and after that point, it goes extremely in opposite directions. But they, you know, even say Hebrew would I guess they would all three be the Abrahamic religion, I guess, is the way it could be described. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, people will say that you worship or you're part of one of the three big Abrahamic religions, right? Those three are, I think, thought to be worshiping the same God.
Okay. Let's start with Christianity and you know, go right by the Bible, Genesis, you know, made Adam and Eve and so forth, and then get up to the Great Flood where the only people that were left was Noah's family, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's at some point, okay. Yeah. So what, like 8 or 12 people, something like that?
Right, okay. So from that point, they go out and multiply, and we become, you know, it starts to populate the world. I guess my question is, if everybody started from one family, where...
Incest? Correct.
Well, I'm not even talking about that. I know it would have to be, especially from the beginning with Adam and Eve, but let's not even worry about that. Let's just worry about they've populated the earth. Now, there's been many generations go on. Where in the Bible does, in the Christian Bible, does it say how there are enemies of God and the families of Noah? Does anybody know where that distinction comes? Because I don't even know where the Philistines came in. For some reason, the Israelites hated the Philistines, and I don't even know how they came to be if they were all from the same family. Does that question make sense to you?
I'm in over my head. Adam, what do you think?
From what I read and studied, now Noah had three sons. I don't know their names in English, but in Hebrew and in Arabic, they are Sem, Ham, and Yefeth. And one went and became, well, according to the biblical story, populated Asia and Asia Minor, which then became the Persian and the further east. One went up north and populated near Europe and north of the Arabian Peninsula, so Turkey, Syria, and this area, and one went left and populated, I think, North Africa. And they populated so much and became very distinctive nations that at some point you will see the rise of the Palestinians or the rise of different nations that they came from. These, apparently, according to the Bible, all nations are cousins at the end of the day, but they became leagues. And they became fighting leagues. And that's how you find later in the story, the Palestinians came as the enemy of God and the struggle between the Palestinians and the Israelis and so forth. Does that answer your question, Frank?
Yeah, that gives me a much better understanding of it. And I understand, was it Isaac that had two sons or and one became Hebrew and the other one became what is now Isaac considered Arabic? Is that Ishmael?
Yes. So that's according to the three religions, that Isaac is the father of all Jews, father of Israel, the Israelites, and then Ishmael became the father of the Arabs. However, from a scientific point of view, genetics and historical analysis, sociology, it is actually debatable that Ishmael not necessarily the father of Arabs. Again, there are two sides of the story here. Depends what you want to investigate. But again, yeah, according to the three religions,
a scientific question or a or like religious in canon question.
Well, I guess I get confused how God can look down. If we're all his children, can look down and say, I can't quote the verse, but where he's talking about going and killing the Philistines, their wives, their unborn, putting a sword through the mother's belly. I mean, why would a God who considered us all his children be willing to do that? I mean, how could that a whole nation be so evil that an innocent child he would be willing to put to death because he was told what he or she was told, whatever their parents taught him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, asking the right questions to the wrong people, right? Cause, I think we agree with you. You need to call into the theist experience or something like that. Belief wanted, maybe. I mean, like, what do you want to say, Frank? We agree with you. We think it's absolutely crazy that people make any I won't speak for Adam. I think it's absolutely crazy that anyone would make real life decisions of any kind on what some people told them because they read it in a book or because their parents told them and their parents told them and their parents told them. Like, all of these, I think to me, that's part of this whole like deconstruction experience is realizing how you get your information and what you do with the information that you get and how you process it and how you make decisions about life. And I can't condone, like, this is one of the reasons why I don't like, you know, tradition, air quotes. It's because I feel like it's too much of doing things for reasons that are unknown or obscure or not particularly good. What do you think, Adam?
I can give you the most reasonable apologetic response that I heard about this. But this will become belief wanted. So in one of the debates that I had with a pastor, he goes, well, of course, God did not command all these killings and massacre. These were the people at the time. Those people in the Bible, they were going through wars as two nations in the primitive times. It was brutal wars, and they killed all these people. And because they won the war, they thought that God helped him and it was a command from God. But don't forget that the Bible was written by people, and that's their worldly view. It doesn't mean that actually God commanded these killings. which I think from an atheist or agnostic perspective, I agree with that. Whether I believe in the Bible or not, we can both conclude in this instance that it wasn't God, or that there was no deity whatsoever commanded those killings. It was a human right. behavior. So if that right. is your response as a believer, then okay, I will agree with you on that instance. And that was the end of the conversation with that pastor. So I guess what we can both agree on as believers and non-believers, that God did not command any of these killings.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so I guess the believers would say that this was like a lie or a misinterpretation or something like that. We would say, well, the whole story is potentially questionable. And, you know, so yeah, what do you think, Frank?
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time for my call, because I think you're dead on. It would be more appropriate to call another type of show, but I guess I just wanted your opinion on how to handle a debate with somebody like that. And he just gave me an example of that, which I thought is pretty good. You know, I mean, yeah. that's exactly how I feel about all religions, that God was made in our image, and they put human characteristics on that God. Like, for instance, for he was a jealous God, and he would have right. no false gods before him. I mean, what God is, if he's truly a God, is going to be jealous? You know, I mean, that's a human characteristic put on an imaginary being by a human, you know?
Yeah, you'd think that if you were the creator of the universe, you'd have a little more, like, security in yourself, you know? A little more self-assured or something like that.
Yeah, supposedly he says the greatest gift he has given us humans is the gift of life. And then what's he do? He wipes it all out with a flood, you know, according to this book. But anyway, I just kind of wanted to have my notions heard and give me your opinions of how you handle debates and stuff. And I won't take up any more time, but I just it's been something that's been, you know, in the back of my mind trying to figure out rationally, but there's no real way to do that. So. But anyway, I do appreciate you taking the time for my call, and I'll let you move on to the next one.
All right. Thanks very much, Frank. Yeah, I mean, you know, if someone came out to me and like presented me with this problem, I've spoken to believers who say, yeah, God commanded that, who will agree that God commanded it, right? And they'll say, yeah, but it's because, you know, they were heathens, and therefore they don't deserve to die. So they don't deserve to live. So they really go hard on the fact that, like, because these people were enemies of God, that they therefore deserve death, or, you know, they don't have the same, right? And it's really surprising, right? So maybe it's effective in that regard, because they just sort of say, yep, it says that, and I believe that, and I think it's right because God is the boss, and if God said it, then I think it's the right thing to do. And they just like find a way to make it make sense in their heads, and sort of in so doing throw away their own sort of moral compass, I would say. But exactly. Go ahead.
I usually go when I go through these debates, my argument would be, and I'm not sure if Frank is still listening, but yeah, there is also the other element where the killings were not commanded by God. So if we agree that these were people just going into brutal wars and that was their interpretation, how do you then interpret events where the plagues, where God himself goes into killing the firstborn of all Egyptians, or the flood, or all the other things that God, or Sodom and Gomorrah.
More direct.
God, exactly. So now it's actually God himself taking lives and killing people brutally. So yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
the whole story is questionable.
I saw a fun infographic that I did not fact check, but it compared the number of people that God kills in the Bible to the number of people that the devil kills in the Bible. And God has killed orders of magnitude more people than the devil
Far
has
more.
Killed in the Bible, in his own book that says he's great. So anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. Thank you, Adam, so much for coming on the show. Before we totally wrap up, we've got some more things to plug. If you like what you heard today, you can consider buying some of our merch at tiny.cc/merchaca. You can also donate to our Patreon. Oh, there's the merch. Yeah, that looks good. You can see in the middle, we have this this like rotating design of the shirt. And so every month we come up with a new one. And if you guys have any ideas, please email us because we're always down to get new ideas and new designs. And if you're a designer and you're willing to work for free and send us a design, we'll put it on a shirt for you and we'll send you a free shirt. Otherwise, if you want to support the show, you can donate to our Patreon at tiny.cc/Patreon. Or you can become a YouTube member. If you're watching on YouTube, you can click the join button that's under this video on YouTube. You can also donate to our fundraiser through YouTube. So I think that clears us for plugs for the day. But Adam, again, thank you so much for coming on. It was great having you, great having your perspective. And I would have been totally lost on that last call about like the history of these different things, because man, I lost that a long time ago if I ever knew it. So it's been great.
Thank you, MB.
Yeah. If you want to see what the ACA is doing, you can visit atheist-community.org. You can tweet at me at MDAware. It's MDEAWARE if you want to follow up on anything from the show or just chat. Where can we find you, Adam?
I believe you can find me on YouTube, Adam and Masri English channel. You can also reach out to me on my website, adamandmasri.online, or on Instagram at freethinker_AdamandMasri. So you can see them on the screen. And yeah.
What a nice headshot. Did
you thank get that you. Professionally done? It was professionally taken, yes.
Yeah, I need to get on that. I have not bothered yet.
It was taken for another purpose, but yeah, it worked well for the channel.
Fair enough. Finally, none of this would be possible without the hard work of the AC crew. Do we have the crew cam? There it is. Hi, crew. Thank you so much for your hard work today. Fantastic job. I know it's a little bit early, but that's all for now from Truth Wanted. We'll catch you live on YouTube next Friday at 7 p.m. Central. I'm your host, MD Aware. And remember, keep wanting truth.
Watch The Nonprofits and join the hosts in the live chat Sundays at 3 p.m. Central between The Atheist Experience and Talk Hidden. Visit tiny.cc/ytnp.